This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, more evidence the left has come unhinged. From hostile town hall meetings to even road rage, the violent intimidation grows. North Dakota Congressman Kevin Cramer is here in just a moment. And another fake news-created scandal. The Washington Post is claiming that President Trump disclosed highly sensitive information to the Russian foreign minister in their recent meeting. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin is here to address the claims by the Post, as well as the reports that North Korea's missile capabilities are greater than originally thought. Also yesterday, President Trump spoke at the 36th Annual National Peace Officers Memorial Service here in Washington, D.C. My hometown sheriff, Sheriff Sid Grotreau, was at yesterday's event, and he joins me here in studio a little later. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to miss anything on your way home, you can check it out later. Everything is archived right there at TonyPerkins.com. Also, lots of information available for you. Just follow the links over. Might remind you, we still have a few spots left for our Alaskan cruise coming up the end of July. If you'd like to join myself, General Boykin, Ambassador Ken Blackwell, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, you can sign up. Find out more. Go to TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right. The left, we saw this immediately after the election, where they took to the streets here in Washington, D.C., burning things, tearing things up, rioting, and it's only escalated. You know, we've seen it go from hostile town hall meetings to even cases of road rage. Violence and intimidation against Republicans has reached all-time highs. Some go as far to say that it's the new normal. Joining us now is Congressman Kevin Cramer. He represents the at-large congressional district of North Dakota. He also serves on the House Committee on Energy and Commerce and was a recent recipient of the hostility from the left. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's good to be with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, Congressman, I know you were in your district just having town hall meetings, staying in touch with your constituents, and tell our listeners what happened.
Sure. Well, my town halls, first of all, I think, be fair, I have a lot of them. In fact, according to Legistorm, I have the most of any member. So I don't have a lot of the pent-up anxiety that some others have. And, of course, as you stated, I have the whole state. So I spread them out a lot. So I didn't even have 100 people at any one of my town halls this last week. But they were rowdy. And in one particular case, a gentleman, I guess that's the kind of term for him, but he kept getting up and kind of charging toward me at the front of the room. I have what's called coffee with Cramer. So they're pretty casual events. And after about the third or fourth time he came toward me, some people that were irritated and concerned for my safety got up and tried to stop him. And the person that grabbed him first was arrested, or not arrested, but removed. And then he came at me one more time, took some money out, tried to shove it in my pocket. And all of this is sort of over the fact that they hate rich people. He hates rich people. Donald Trump's rich and should pay more in taxes. And anyway, but when he shoved this money in my pocket, of course, that required contact, and he did it fairly aggressively, and then that police officer removed him. Well, the same person is a pretty regular caller to talk radio. He writes a lot of letters to the editor. He leaves awful voicemail messages and various people's voicemail. But the thing, I think, and to get to the topic you were just discussing, there is an intimidation factor to all of this. Not to me. I believe that bullies prey on weak people, and I try very hard not to be intimidated. I don't offend very easily either. But many others, conservatives and even just regular people, normal people that are there to learn something, are very much intimidated by this.
Right, right.
And that's what concerns me more than anything.
Yeah, that's a good point, because when people don't like to, they're coming out to have coffee with you. They want to sit down and find out what's happening in Washington, D.C., and they're not accustomed to that kind of stuff. And so when they see it, they wow, I don't want to be a part of that. And so they, they're not going to come back next time as a result, which that hinders your ability to represent the citizens of your state.
That's exactly right. It That's well said. And the other thing is, many of them after these events will come and say, "Well, I wanted to say this, or I want to tell my Obamacare tragic story of, you know, not being able to pay my deductible or not be able to use the health care I have, but I was afraid for my safety." I hear that from a lot of people. For the most part, many of them are just, they're stunned, not just by the aggressiveness or the physical approach of some of them and the loudness and rudeness. They're stunned even at their philosophy. The idea that wealthy people somehow should, aren't paying their fair share, or somehow we should hate them because they're wealthy or a single-payer system is the only way to go, is really kind of astounding for many North Dakotans. It's the first time they've heard fellow North Dakotans even talk like that.
Yeah, that's true. It's an education, it's an experience, but an experience some would prefer not to have. So, Congressman Cramer, how much money did he try to shove in your pocket?
Well, it wasn't very much. He took everything he had out of his pocket. I don't know how much it was. I quickly gave it to the police officers who took him away to make sure he got it back. The point he was trying to make was he wanted to show he's willing to have his taxes go up. The story I never got to tell was the fact that Obamacare actually had created a loophole for exchanges, and about two-thirds of the states took advantage of this loophole to actually make it impossible for faith-based organizations, congregations, charities to help people pay their deductibles and their premiums should there be a lapse. That was sort of a gift to the insurance companies, evidently, to allow them to kick people off of their insurance if they have lapse. And so they didn't even allow charities to be charitable. I didn't even get to that point because, of course, I think that's a ruckus. But he was trying to illustrate he was willing to have his taxes go up. The problem was he was making that same claim for everybody sitting in the room and all of our citizens.
Well, I think I would have kept the money and sent him a receipt for a campaign contribution.
There you go. That would have been the ultimate insult.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest, Congressman Kevin Cramer of North Dakota. He represents the entire state, which is, there's a couple of states like that where you actually have a congressman. You got two senators, but one congressman because of the population of the state. Now, Kevin, you're not the only one that's in this category. You've had other members that have experienced, even cases of some greater hostility from the left.
Yeah, in fact, I was just on the airplane getting to Washington, my friend from Minnesota, Eric Paulson, was telling me that protesters were waiting for him at the airport when he arrived home and that they shut down his office. And I don't really, Tony, what I wonder about is this an effective way to make your point? And to me, at least in places like North Dakota Nice, Minnesota Nice, I don't think it is. I think people look at that and go, wow, they may not stand up to the bully at the airport or at the office or at a town hall, but I suspect they'll stand up to him at the ballot box, hopefully, and say, we're not going to reward this crazy liberal left tactic and strategy. Not to mention, it just erodes their whole intellectual argument to the degree they have one.
Well, they've never been worried about making an intellectual argument. That's why they use the intimidation. They want to silence the other side because they cannot defend their own views and positions. You know, Congressman, I think it's not going to affect guys like you or, others that are being intimidated. Jason Chaffetz, he's experienced.
Right.
Diane Black, who is a good friend. Right. Justin Amash, Roger Marshall in Kansas, Tom McClintock in California. They've all experienced this. And in fact, Congressman from Tennessee, Kustoff, had a case of road rage where David had somebody trying to run him off the road after one of his town hall meetings. That's not going to shake you guys. I mean, I know you guys. I know you're solid in your commitments, your beliefs, your ideology, why you're here. But I go back to what you said earlier, because I think this is what it's all about. This is about intimidation. It is about trying to silence public discussion and debate and dialogue, and it's to drive conservatives who came out in record numbers in this last election to make a change. It's to drive them back into the shadows of society. And what we have to do is not respond in kind, but to respond with boldness and courage and say, you know what, this is America. We're not going to be silenced.
No, I think that's exactly right, Tony, and that's the most important message for all of us. And you know, of course, you've been active for so long in the arena, the real arena for example, religious liberties, where we've seen in many respects, and this is just my observation, Tony, my opinion, but over the last few decades where the church itself has been intimidated into silence in many cases, and we see the result. Now we wake up and we suddenly don't have the liberties that we had previous to all of this, because we didn't stand up for them when the fight was early. And it's got real consequence to not stand up to this. And again, not with the same tactics for sure, but nonetheless with boldness and perseverance.
Without question. Congressman Kevin Cramer, thank you for joining us, and thank you for standing up and not being intimidated.
Thank you for the encouragement. One thing we all need in this business, I always say to my supporters and my constituents, hold me accountable and then have my back, and I'll do the same.
Absolutely. And next time, keep the money, okay?
All right. Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right. Kevin, great to talk with you. Kevin Cramer of North Dakota. It really would have been something. Okay, I'll take your money and then send him a campaign contribution form. Look, this is how the left operates. And if you've never read the book Rules for Radicals, Saul Alinsky, he laid this out. Look, this is the textbook. It's really the Bible for the left and how they operate. It's not a long book. It doesn't take you long to read. You can read it in one sitting. If you haven't read it, not that I'm encouraging you to buy their books, but you can certainly get one at the library or even look at it online. There's plenty out there on it. But this is one of their key tools, is intimidation. They don't want to have debates. They're not interested in winning a debate. They're not interested in the intellectual argument, as the congressman was talking about. It is about silencing. Look, what they do is they try to marginalize. They'll come after. They'll try the names. That's why the left is great with all these names: bigot, homophobe, hater. You name it. They come up with the names, the labels. That's designed to marginalize. When that doesn't work, they move to the next level. They want to try to isolate through this marginalization, and when that doesn't work, they move to the next level of intimidation. And a part of that intimidation sometimes just threats, and part of it is the labeling, the lawsuits. And when that doesn't work, they go to that level of violence. And we've seen it. I mean, it's been really, the curtain has been pulled back since this election. Even in the general election, we saw it in some of the events, the campaign events of Donald Trump. But since the election, I mean, I was here in Washington. During the on election day, election night, and the roads blocked because of the protesters and the burning stuff, throwing stuff, looting, rioting. This is what they're about. They want you to be silent. They want you to be intimidated. You can't be. You've got to continue to stand and speak the truth, not in the same way they do, but you cannot be intimidated. All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined by our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Undersecretary for Military Intelligence. Did the president, as the Washington Post reported, release sensitive intelligence information to the Russians in his recent meeting? Or is this another fake scandal by fake news sources? We're going to talk with the general when we return.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrades. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Rhonda had always felt in her heart that abortion was somehow wrong. Hi, Kim Cotola for Cradle My Heart today. But she chose to listen to those who said it wasn't a baby and it was just a woman's choice. Afterwards, excuses and defenses put up against the truth only made the pain worse. Counseling didn't help and only increased her confusion and hopelessness. But with the help of an after-abortion Bible study, Rhonda learned that seeking God's best channels our sorrow His way. The worldly sorrow of self-justification is a spiritual dead end. Godly sorrow means repenting, admitting our part in the abortion decision. This repairs our emotions as God wipes out our sins and refreshes us by healing our hearts. Find a network of Christ-centered organizations offering help for unplanned pregnancy and hope after abortion at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts one story at a time, CradleMyHeart.org.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. I want. It can be an incessant whine from children, can it? Yet too often, parents give in to their kids, and it's affecting not just their behavior, but the development of their brains. In an excellent article, Victoria Prude reminds parents that their child's brain is malleable. It can be made stronger or weaker. She warns that parents are creating an artificial world of fun for children, giving them what they want and when they want it, instead of what they need. Training, and yes, discipline. Children need less screen time. They need limits, not overindulgence. They need to have responsibilities in order to learn to work and less technology in order to learn how to play. Parents, don't neglect the responsibility God has given you to shape your child's spiritual heart and mind. It's the most important thing we will ever do. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. Washington Post, a breaking story. Another one of these fake news created scandals. They reported that President Trump disclosed highly sensitive information in his recent meeting with the Russian Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov. And the Russian ambassador, White House National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster says President Trump said nothing inappropriate during his meeting with the Russian foreign minister and the Russian ambassador last week. Joining us now to talk about this, retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Undersecretary for Military Intelligence. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Glad to be here.
All right. So what of these reports that the president released highly classified information?
Well, I think the bigger story should be who leaked the information about what took place in a closed-door session in the White House with the Russians. Look, the president has total authority to do exactly what he did. So the president can classify and he can declassify. And that's exactly what he did when he shared that with the Russians. My thought on this, Tony, is if this was something that would help protect Americans by informing the Russians that there is a threat of something being smuggled onto an airplane, then I think that the whole idea that we should not share that with someone who may be able to help us to use that information is just foolishness. President has done nothing illegal here.
What amazes me is how the media is waiting to jump on anything this president mm-hmm. does. I mean, if you recall back in the Obama White House, where they mm-hmm. Quote supposedly mistakenly identified a CIA chief in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. they've released that information. Why the media didn't make big deals out of that and quickly, you know, moved on? It looks like they're looking for anything they can to manufacture a, mm-hmm. a scandal around this president.
Well, how about when Joe Biden identified SEAL Team 6 as being the ones that killed Osama bin Laden, which was highly classified, particularly given the potential threat to the families of those young men that live in the Virginia Beach area there. So there is a double standard here, as we see. But I will tell you this, Tony, this is not anything new. You know, this has been done repeatedly. And I have seen senior intelligence people pass highly classified information to a foreigner because at that moment it was important to do so. It was important to share that information with them for a variety of reasons. So I think that this whole thing is much to do about nothing, and it goes back to what you just said. It is the media whipping this into a frenzy when the reality is they should focus on who in that White House is leaking this kind of information. That's the bigger issue to me.
Yeah, it is. That would, I think, be troubling to the White House. Of course, it could have come from his guest that he was speaking to. Who knows? McMasters did stress that Trump was not even aware of where the information came from and was not briefed on the sources or the methods. So, I mean, he doesn't have all that detail that he could release anyway.
Well, the executive order that every president signs is called Executive Order 12333, which talks about how you protect sources and methods. In this case, he neither talked about sources nor methods based on the information that has been provided by the White House. He did not talk about sources and methods. The rumor is that it came from the Israelis. Well, okay, but he didn't tell them that. This is speculation by the media, so in some ways you have to say, well, maybe the media is doing more harm than what Trump did in there.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, retired from the United States Army, with me. We're discussing the Washington Post story that President Trump released sensitive intelligence information to the Russians. Looks like another manufactured story. I want to go to something else before we run out of time here. That is North Korea. Yeah. Intelligence now suggests that North Korea and their missile program has greater capabilities than originally thought.
Yeah, I think this was an eye-opener. Now, remember back when they had that parade here a couple of weeks ago, they actually demonstrated, or didn't demonstrate, but we saw some new missiles that we had not seen before, one of which was a submarine-fired missile, and then others were what they tested the other day, which was a much longer-range intercontinental ballistic missile. And this thing traveled probably close to 500 miles, which really put it in a new category. I mean, think of what they can reach. That puts them, sadly, within range of potentially of Guam, where there is a substantial U.S. military presence.
Well, even Hawaii is preparing for a potential North Korean attack. They are reportedly also close to maybe being able to fit these missiles with nuclear capabilities.
That's what I think. That's a stretch. I don't think they're quite there yet. And remember too that, like, one out of the last three has actually fired, so they're...
Yeah, you probably wouldn't want to be firing something like that because you don't know it might come down on your own head.
Well, the quality control on that is not all that good right now, so if they had any sense at all, they would think twice about that.
But it's provocative for him to... I mean, this was Saturday night or Sunday, their time, firing another missile. They're really pushing forward with this and pushing the envelope, are they not?
They are pushing the envelope, but I will tell you that I've said repeatedly, stand by, you're going to see some more missile tests. And they're pushing now to the point that I think that China is going to have to really squeeze them hard. And China, to their credit, I think is trying to make a difference in this. But remember that also China is one of the reasons they are where they are, because China's been their biggest funder and supplied them with an awful lot of materiel for this program.
Well, even Russia has expressed some concern over what that crazy kid with bad hair has been doing.
Well, that's exactly right, and I think that it's important that we understand that this has got to be a joint effort to bring Kim Jong-un back down to earth, and so to speak, no pun intended.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there. General Jerry Boykin, leave the puns to me. You can go now.
Thank you, boss.
All right, folks. Don't go away. More to come. Coming up next, it's National Police Week. My good friend, Sheriff Sid Gautreaux of East Baton Rouge Parish, is here when we return. Don't go away. We're back after this.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, some of the economic news that has come out today is housing starts and housing permits both fell. So they take a little breather. Remember, they had an incredible start to the year. They had a good month last month. So we've got housing starts down 2.6% and permits fall by 2.5%. Here's one of the biggest problems I see with that. We are already seeing dramatic pressure on both existing home sales and new home sales. What I mean by that pressure is price pressure. We are going to see home prices, new construction now start to go up dramatically along with existing home prices because of the lack of inventory. And we are headed in to the busiest time of year, the housing time of year. Now, having said that, because of the strong beginning of the year, we're still up 5.7% year over year. So this time last year, we were a lot worse. So we are up, and that's good news. That's the bright spot. So we'll see where it goes. But I've got to admit, I'm a little bit surprised, particularly in light of the fact we are seeing reports from the real estate area of things saying that millennials are entering into the housing market in numbers that we haven't seen in many, many years. And of course, 10 years ago, they weren't called millennials, but young people coming into the housing buying arena are finally getting where they ought to be as they feel a little bit better about their job security and their incomes.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad that you are with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Again, the website, tonyperkins.com. This week is National Police Week, and here in Washington, D.C., a number of events, including yesterday, a memorial service at the Capitol in which President Trump spoke at, as 143 officers who died in 2016 were recognized for their sacrifice. And we've seen, this is actually the highest we've seen in probably about 5 years, we've seen this peak of attacks on law enforcement. We've talked about this on the program before, as we've seen the hostility that was really fomented between certain community segments of the community and law enforcement in recent years. And the president addressing that very specifically yesterday. And in fact, I know with the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, working very closely with the law enforcement community to bring the community and law enforcement together to put an end to this hostility toward police officers. Well, joining me now is the sheriff of East Baton Rouge Parish, the sheriff's office, which I once worked. And Sheriff Gotro was here in town this week for the National Memorial Service, and he joins me now in studio. Sheriff, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, I know you were here because East Baton Rouge Parish, our office, lost officers last year in one of the most brazen attacks that we saw in both in Dallas and Baton Rouge, where city police officers, two city police officers, were killed, as well as a sheriff's deputy. And you've had it's been a tough year.
Yeah, it has, Tony. You know, I've been in law enforcement now for 42 years, and thank God this was the first time I've lost an officer in the line of duty in this respect. But and I pray that it would have been the last. But unfortunately, as you know, last March we lost a second officer who was killed as well. But last summer it all started, with the Sterling shooting, Baton Rouge Police Department, which was under investigation by the Department of Justice, Civil Rights Division, and it sparked a good bit of protests and demonstrations in Baton Rouge, which you know, and that lasted for several days. And then, of course, it looked like things were getting a little bit better when on one Sunday morning, calm Sunday morning, this guy shows up from another state and kind of a copycat thing that happened in Dallas 2 weeks earlier. He actually shot three Baton Rouge City police officers, two of which were killed, and he shot three sheriff's deputies, one of which was killed, one of which is almost fully recovered from his injuries, and the other is still in rehab in Houston. So we're prayerful that they're all recover fully from their injuries, but got a long way to go.
Yeah, and you mentioned there was another Deputy Sergeant Sean Anderson, who actually happened to be a member of my church, was shot and killed in March of this year. So it's been a difficult year for the department.
It has. That coupled with the great flood, which you I know are still not back in your home, it's been a really tough year, but God doesn't put too much on us, never does, that we can't handle. And with Him and with our faith in Him, we've gotten through this, and we'll continue to move forward and come out a better people.
You know, Sheriff, I know that you were chief of police in Baker. Of course, you were at the sheriff's office years ago. Then you was elected chief when I represented the area of Baker. So we've known each other for a long time. And as you pointed out, this is the first time in your law enforcement career that you've lost officers in the line of duty like this. How do you handle that? Because I know you're close to your officers and you kind of build that family atmosphere, and it's difficult.
It is. When people refer to it as being a law enforcement family, it is. And like any other family, we have our differences and so forth. But at the end of the day, we're all there for the same purpose. And the only purpose is to serve and protect. And when you, as you know, are a professional law enforcement officer, those of us who have the true servant heart and true servant mentality, we survive in this business and we become stronger in this business. And that's what keeps us together, is that faith that we have, but it is tough. It's really tough. But as a family, when you're faced with these situations in your own family, in the law enforcement family, it's good for us to be able to come together as we've done this weekend. And we'll talk about that a little later, I'm sure, about what it means to the survivors and to the law enforcement family to have organizations such as COPS, Concern of Police Survivors, FOP, and other things that have really been the driving force behind the Law Enforcement Memorial Week.
And, Sheriff, you talk about faith. You have two chaplains at the sheriff's office.
Right.
And what role does that play? I mean, we're up against a break. If you'll hang tight with me.
Sure.
We'll come back on the other side of the break because I want to talk about that. The role of you've been pretty outspoken on this and make no apologies for the role that plays in the law enforcement community. And I also want to talk to you about the atmosphere that law enforcement officers have had to do their work in this very hostile society. It's a difficult, difficult job. All right, folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Sheriff Sid Gautreaux of East Baton Rouge Parish is my guest in studio here as we recognize the National Police Week here in Washington, D.C., with a number of ceremonies that are going on. We're going to continue our conversation with the sheriff when we return. A little bit later, we're going to go to the phone line. So don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Frank Turek, Richard Land, Norman Geisler, Greg Kokel, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. Visit ses.edu for details.
8 Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Website, TonyPerkins.com. Hey, pastors, if you're listening, we still have a few, and I emphasize a few, spots left for our annual Watchman on the Wall Pastors Briefing, which takes place next week here in Washington, D.C. It's great. This will be our 14th annual conference just for pastors. You'll hear from leaders on Capitol Hill, but then you'll hear from pastors across the nation who are engaging, both through their preaching and through their teaching, but also through engaging their communities. Dr. Tony Evans is going to be our closing keynote from Dallas, Texas. Anyway, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, we're talking, this week is the National Police Week, and yesterday the 36th Annual National Peace Officers Memorial Service was at the U.S. Capitol, and President Trump spoke. And he said, it's a great honor to address America's heroes on this most solemn occasion. And he said, words cannot express the depth of our gratitude, but I hope that our actions will show you how deeply we care and how strongly we feel about protecting those who protect us. And he went on to say that the attacks and the ambushes that have taken place against police officers must end. And he's calling on all Americans to work together with law enforcement to make our community safer for citizens and for those officers who protect and defend. And joining me in studio is Sheriff Sid Gotro, a good friend of mine from East Baton Rouge Parish. He is the sheriff there. And prior to that was the chief of police in Baker, Louisiana, an area that I represented when I was in office a number of years ago. Sheriff, thanks for sticking around.
Thank you.
I'm going to go back. We were talking before the break about the role of faith in law enforcement. I think you're the first. I don't recall having full-time chaplains in the office. I think because I was there for about a decade back when Al Amos was sheriff.
Yeah.
So you're the first to make that an official position.
Yes, and I thought it was very important. I brought in two full-time chaplains, and you know both of them, mm-hmm. Ken Ellis and Gordon Atwell, and they've both done a tremendous job. They both pastor at different churches, their own church. but they're available to us for our needs, and they do a tremendous job for us. Anytime we have, just like these officers, I mean deputies that were shot, they were there for the families, they were there for other officers, and they do that on a daily basis just to help meet the needs of anyone who wishes. It's multi-denominational. And we do it that way. So it's a service that we provide for those in the department that want to take advantage of it.
Well, increasingly it's become – I mean, it's always been a stressful job.
Right.
I mean, it's just a stressful job. Yeah. You see things that other people don't see, and you have to deal with it. I can recall on one shift – going from interacting with the governor of the state, which this was back when Edwin Edwards was governor, you deal with you could be dealing with the governor one minute and a drunk or a drug addict the next, and a thief, and anything in between, and you have to be able to go in and properly assess and deal with each situation. That's stressful.
It is. It really is. It takes a unique person to choose law enforcement as a profession. And you know, that's the difference. And my wife and I were talking about it last night. I said, you know, any other profession, you go to work and you pretty much have a pretty high confidence rate that you're coming home in the afternoon. But law enforcement, you never know when you're going to get that call. And you, every time you walk out the door could be the last and the last time that you see your loved ones. And it's just amazing how the men and women in law enforcement, and so many of them have such a strong faith that's what gets us through that, and knowing that we're serving a greater good, and that we're called to do that, you know, and of course these all the officers and deputies that they honored yesterday, you know, I think it, and the Bible says it best, you know, no greater love hath this than one man lay his life down for another. So, yeah. You know.
And it's important to have, I think, and I commend you, and I've talked about this actually when you were running for sheriff. It's one of the things I wanted
right.
to see you do, and you have followed through on that to bring that faith component so that those that are dealing with that stress and counseling is expensive. Getting someone to talk to is not cheap. But having chaplains who are there for these guys to talk to.
That's
and
right.
can help them through these difficult things. I mean, officers, law enforcement have higher rates of divorce, substance abuse, when they don't have any other place to turn.
Well, and you're exactly right. And you know, and of course, you know, I started in 76 and you started thereafter. But, we didn't have any of that available. And of course, there's the mantra that we put on that we can handle anything and nothing's going to really affect us. And it's not right. I mean, it's not true.
Yeah.
Excuse me. It's really a lie we tell each other because we hurt just like anybody else does, and we have the same feelings that other people do, and when we see the things that we have to see and deal with the things that we have to deal with,
I can remember in vivid detail the first homicide I had to work.
That's right.
And, I mean, you remember those things, and I can remember when you see those things, there's certain crime scenes you see, certain crimes you work that you have to process that, and it's difficult.
That's right.
It's not like TV.
No, it's nothing like TV. And, you know, I remember the first suicide I went to, and it was 38 years ago, but I remember it like it was yesterday. And as a human being, you do not forget those things, but you deal with them by your faith, whatever.
Well, you deal with them in different ways.
That's right.
You can process them and deal with it in an effective way, or a way that is at least harmful.
That's right.
Or you can suppress it. And I knew a lot of guys I worked with. I'm sure you did that. Would suppress it. A lot of them turn to alcohol, mm-hmm. and they have relationship issues. But I commend you for having the chaplains there as a resource for the officers and their families. Sheriff Gotra, I want to ask you about this. I made comment on the president's remarks yesterday where he said these attacks against police officers must end, and calling on all Americans to work together with law enforcement to make our community safer. there really has been in recent years, in the last decade, a growing hostility that in what I'll say it, you may not want to say it, but I think it was fomented by our own government and in some cases by the last administration toward law enforcement. That's made the job very dangerous.
It has. And in my 42 years, this last 4 or 5 years especially, I have never seen the amount of hostility that's directed towards law enforcement that I've seen now and that we're seeing now. You know, it's hardly a day goes by now that you don't see where some officer's killed somewhere.
Right.
And then to have officers and deputies, you know, like the officers in Dallas and ambush like they were, and then 2 weeks later we have this guy come down and ambush our law enforcement officers. Those things never happened before. And, you know, it's just a total indifference, and I think what I've seen is law enforcement over the past several years be more villainized than
right.
anything else. And, you know, it's demoralizing to the good officers that serve, and it's disheartening. But we're there to do a job, and we're going to continue to do the job to the best of our abilities. But yesterday, what the president had to say was very, very encouraging to all of us who serve in law enforcement, because it was clear by his message to all of us that he was going to stand by law enforcement and help us not only to do our jobs, but to do our jobs better.
So, Sheriff, in the wake of this, and of course in Baton Rouge, as we pointed out, the shooting that took place there last July, has that had an effect upon those in law enforcement? If some, you know, said, I'm not sure this is the profession for me. I mean, I've talked to some who were considering law enforcement that this growing hostility has caused them to maybe choose a different career track, which, frankly, I've seen the same thing occur in the whole public arena with this hostility of the left. I was talking about this earlier, how, you know, congressmen are being attacked, you know, not with guns and such, but in some cases threatened with them. But this intimidation is driving a lot of good people away from public service.
I think so, and I think it's not just in law enforcement, but it's right here in Congress. And you know, I know that we lost some young people, deputies that had just got hired on, and when they saw the reality of what they were faced with, especially after the shootings, we lost a few. Baton Rouge City Police lost a few. We've had some that decided it just wasn't what they thought it was going to be and wasn't what they intended it to be, and they've gone on and retired. But it's also hurt our recruiting efforts as well, Tony. And that's not just in Baton Rouge, I mean, listen, Louisiana, that's nationwide. I talk to my colleagues across the country, and recruiting is becoming harder and harder for us to reach out and find the quality men and women that we want to serve in law enforcement and who want to serve
yeah.
in law enforcement.
Well, I can say that I cannot think of a more noble profession. And, you know, if they'd have kept me, I'd still be in there.
But, I told you I got you a spot.
I have the highest regard for law enforcement and for the military because, as you said earlier, you know, it's a reflection. In law enforcement, our country is so different, and I think you know this. I worked when I came out of the Marine Corps with the State Department and trained foreign police officers in anti-terrorism. Law enforcement in other countries is so different than ours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are there. Well, I don't want to paint them all with a broad brush, but the motivation here in this country is much different. It is to protect and to serve. Not so in some of these other countries. And it goes back, I think, to what you made reference to earlier. And it's how the Christian, Judeo-Christian worldview has impacted us in Western civilization, that greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends. People are willing to give their lives for something. I think what's making that difficult now is that sacrifice is not respected. It's not revered as it should be and as it has been generally by society. And I think as police officers are vilified, few are saying, why would I risk my life for people who don't appreciate what I'm doing?
And you're exactly right. And rather than vilify a whole group of people, Let's work at removing those very few that don't need to be wearing a badge or carrying a gun, and let's do that. Let's improve our standards. Let's do what we can to help. Number one, not to hire those individuals and identify them to begin with, but number two, when they are identified, to remove them. But Tony, in my career, and I know you could back this up yourself with your knowledge in law enforcement, the vast, vast majority of people that serve in law enforcement are good people. And, you know, but I will say that I think it's not just what's happened in law enforcement. We've been villainized for several years now, but when you look at the military, it's been dismantled and to some degree demoralized. Yeah. And, you know, I think it has an effect on all of those young people who really want to pursue careers in either, to really question themselves, is this what I really want to do?
I think it's a part of the deconstruction of society that we've seen as a whole. And it's a breaking down that moral fabric. I know I started in 1982, so a few years behind you, but I can remember that I've been out on the road with some deputies in the not too recent past, and so I've seen the changes that have taken place and the disregard, the disrespect for not just law enforcement but for human life in general. That's and I think as we move further away from that, I would say our biblical roots and foundation as a society, recognizing there's a God to whom we're all accountable and that all human life is created in His image and therefore worthy of protection and value, the further we move away from that, I think the more difficult it becomes to keep order in society as a whole.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. And, you know, all human life is valued. And you know, just back home, I see young men killing young men on the streets just about every day. You know, I think it's a lack of moral fiber within our communities today. And, you know, but I have to say this too, Tony, and going back if I have a moment, you know, we got some wonderful men and women who live in East Baton Rouge Parish. And yes, we had that questionable shooting and Justice Department came out with their ruling as far as civil rights violation. And there was some highly unrest in Baton Rouge at that time. But then after the police officers were shot, it's like the community started coming together. Yeah. And then I hate to say it, but the flood was like a big baptism. You know, and you look even after that decision came out a couple weeks ago, you know, I was prepping everybody. I said, listen, a decision is going to come out from the Justice Department. It may be what you want to hear. It might not be what you want to hear, but we all have to accept the decision and move on. And I think for the most part, most of the people in the city of Baton Rouge and East Baton Rouge Parish have taken it and are willing to accept that and move to the next phase. But we didn't have all of that this time. We didn't have all that situation or protests and demonstrations like we had before.
Well, Sheriff, thanks so much for being here today. Great to see you here in my turf here in Washington, D.C.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I always enjoy your company, and I enjoy you more when you're in that pulpit or you're in my office and we're just talking.
All right. Well, folks, I hope you're back tomorrow. Lord willing, we will be. You know what the Apostle Paul says, when you've done everything you can do, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.